Welcome back in, third hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and ring in our man Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Nate and TD, and Talking with TD. TD, what's up, man? How's it going?
Hey, what's going on? How's everything with you guys?
We are doing quite well, and TD, some news this morning on the Titans side of things. Todd Downing looks to be the hire as the next offensive coordinator, so Mike Vrabel and company going with the promoting from within method once again. What do you think of that, and what do you think of the hire of Todd Downing?
Yeah, I think it's a solid move. Continuity is key. I think it's important to go with a guy who knows the players on the team, especially with what we've been facing as far as how the whole offseason has taken place, right? No OTAs, no mini camps. If that's to be the case next year or this upcoming season, it will be tough for an external guy to come in and establish those relationships and really get that feel for the players and how to put them in the best situation. So I think bringing in a guy that has already been there and done that as far as seeing install and those type of things, I think that's really important. And also the terminology, you want to keep that similar. If you remember, that was the key reason why, you know, Arthur Smith was brought aboard to be the OC, was to keep everything flowing in the right direction. And I think it's a solid move. It's not going to get the fanfare that, you know, bringing in, you know, a Jay Gruden or something like that would have. But I think this is a good move for this team. And, again, it stresses continuity, and they can kind of pick up where they are left off.
So, TD, I assume this means more that Raiders fans are everywhere than that they were up at 4 a.m. On the West Coast. But, like, as soon as Rappaport had it first this morning, like really early, yep, immediately Raiders fans – are just all over, you know, all over this, talking about, you know, Downing in that year in 2017, which obviously did not go well. It was Derek Carr coming off a broken leg. Downing had earned the promotion from QB coach, which had gone very well, and then OC did not go well. What is your, you know, recollection of his season as OC? How much do you think that season was on him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the whole season was on him. I mean, there was regression from Michael Crabtree as well as, you know, Amari Cooper still had a solid season. But, I mean, it was his first time calling the plays, so I'm not going to completely ding him on it. I think you have to go back and look at some of his experiences since then and some of the coaches that he's worked with. That, in my opinion, is the key. You're not always going to hit the ground running. That's really the bottom line. But as you mentioned, his work with Derek Carr was outstanding, and Carr, you know, really blossomed, right? He was a Pro Bowl quarterback, you know, so that was big time. And then if you look, you know, he was, you know, he continued to progress. But, I think you can't really put all the stock in what happened in 17.
TD, does the fact that we haven't had, you know, any movement on the defensive coordinator part of this, at least from the outside, signal to you that they're just going to keep this internal as well and move ahead with Shane Bowen as the guy next season?
Yes, that's exactly what it signals. And I've kind of said this multiple times that I think that is what's going to happen. It's going to go internally, and they're just going to go ahead and put the title to the work that Bowen has done. And it's the same situation, continuity. A lot of people are going to ding Shane Bowen for the ineptness on defense. And I get it to an extent. The blame should absolutely be placed on him. But I think you have to look at the fact that there were only three outside linebackers being fielded for most of the games. You know, there were some personnel issues, you know, as far as Harold Landry pretty much being your only consistent, and he wasn't really consistent either. So long story short, you need the horses to run the race. And I don't think they had all the horses there for them to be able to do what they needed to do on defense. And pass rush, that changes everything. That's where it has to happen. You need that pass rush up front. especially if you're not as strong in the back end as they were. You know, so there's a lot to be improved upon, both scheme-wise as well as personnel-wise.
If that's how it goes, TD, what is the value? I mean, obviously, one thing I could say answer to this is we won't be asking Vrabel about it like we did this year. But what is the value internally of putting the title on Shane Bowen? How does that change things for him? How does that maybe change things for the players?
Well, I think one of the values is it would have him as a coordinator and you know, be able to kind of bounce around a little bit more throughout the defense as opposed to just working with the outside linebackers. I mean, that's something. But I really don't think that the value is there as much in the title as it is the second year of experience. And you know, everybody is so quick to mention Dean Pease, and 100% he is worthy of being mentioned, right? But remember, that defense got better. It got much better in year two. So even a guy who had been coaching at that time for 45 years didn't hit the ground running when he first got here, right? So you have to understand that these things take time, especially when you don't have a dynamic guy up front. So you know, it's not as much the title as it is the experience and getting another year in the same scheme. I think that is exactly where the value lies in bringing back Bowen.
ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And TD, Schefter reporting yesterday that Deshaun Watson has asked for a trade from the Texans, apparently asked for it a couple of weeks ago. Can you believe that the Houston Texans have let it get to this point where it looks like they're going to lose their franchise quarterback?
Yeah, it's amazing how that has happened. I laugh because it makes me think of a tweet that DeAndre Hopkins posted recently, and it's just like 1,000 dominoes just falling, and that's really what it is, man. It is unbelievable that this franchise, I mean, at one point the Texans, you talk about teams in the AFC and contenders. They were one of the teams, as you mentioned, consistently. And it's just amazing the free fall that they've had to where, you know, you got your best weapon on offense and Hopkins gone. We don't have time to list all that. But it just has really just crumbled. And it's amazing to see how that has happened.
So, TD, if you've got, we've all been making our guesses on, you know, how this unfolds. Do you have a favorite in mind? And also, do you think that we are going to see more of this moving forward? You know, players taking control of their situation. It hasn't happened a ton in the NFL. It happens more in other leagues like the NBA for certain. Do you think that we'll see more of this?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think really it comes down to terrible circumstances in Houston. But, I mean, you look at Khalil Mack with the Raiders, you know, how that one worked out as far as him being traded. But Carson Palmer, remember, coincidentally, with the Raiders, Carson, or he ended up being with the Raiders, you know, after you know, saying he was done with Cincinnati. So yeah. I think it can happen. The precedent has kind of been set. I thought that this was something that would happen in Philly, right, with Carson Wentz. But we'll see. We'll see how it continues because, you know, how this league is, man. It's different from the others because the team owners have done a really good job of maintaining almost absolute control. So I just want to see how they will turn around and adjust it because I can't imagine Jerry Jones is looking at this with a happy face.
TD, last thing for you here. You've been down at the Senior Bowl. What stood out to you this week down there?
Oh, yeah, it's been a great experience. You know, it's a little bit different, but as far as on the field, you know, the thing that I really like is the matchup guys that are down here. You know, you got Kadarius Toney, you got Dwayne Eskridge, who, by the way, is probably not going to play tomorrow. You got Dimitri Felton out of UCLA. All of these guys are kind of like hybrid runner slash receiver guys that if need be, you can line up in the backfield. So I think that really matches up well with what this Titans team needs. You know, Amari Rodgers, He's another one that I think is a guy that you could put in a slot, but you could also just work him all over the field. So that's really what stood out to me. There's some pretty solid edge guys. You know, Carlos Basham from Wake Forest has stood out. Patrick Jones has been consistent. William Bradley King out of Baylor is an impressive player also. So I got to see some guys that kind of surprised me. Rashad Weaver out of Pittsburgh as well. So it's been a great experience. There's a very nice collection of talent, you know, at the edge position, which is where the Titans are going to need to add some horses, as we talked about earlier. So those are some of the things that stood out the most to me.
ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Nate and TD and Talking with TD, Teron Davenport, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. TD, great stuff, man. We appreciate you taking time to join us.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you guys.
Absolutely. Teron Davenport has been our guest. Spent all week down at the Senior Bowl. Josh Palmer making some noise down there, too.
Yeah, I saw him tearing up some people. And Trey Smith, lots of acclaim. No surprise.
Yeah, no.
Trey Smith is going to be a real good player in the NFL. And that, I can't think, I mean, of all the people who are going to enjoy that assignment, football, all the TD, man. That's made for TD.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And
find someone who loves you like TD loves football.
Exactly. And the Titans are going to need to find their next draft pick. TD looking forward to it down at the Senior Bowl. Where are the Titans going to go with their draft? Mel Kiper released his first draft mock draft over the weekend. Where do the Titans fall there? What kind of pick are they going with? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Terry Crisp, Preds TV analyst, will join us at 8:30. We'll look ahead to the road trip coming up for the Predators this weekend in Tampa Bay with him. So looking forward to having Crispy join us here in just a few minutes. But right now, Joe, Mel Kiper earlier this week came out with his first mock draft looking ahead to the NFL draft coming up here in a few months. And as no surprise, Trevor Lawrence, number one on his draft board to the Jacksonville Jaguars. You look past that. Justin Fields does not appear to number seven on this list, going to the Detroit Lions. So you look at the picks that Kiper has ahead of Justin Fields: Devontae Smith at number two to the Jets, Ja'Marr Chase, number three to the Miami Dolphins, which I think a lot of people have forgotten about Ja'Marr Chase because he set out this year, but that dude is an absolute stud.
He is good.
Zach Wilson, quarterback from BYU, to the Falcons and Arthur Smith at number four. And Justin Fields, like I said, not going until number seven with the Detroit Lions. What do you think of that? This is not just a Mel Kiper thing. There is a theory out there that maybe Fields can slide in this draft. I've seen, you know, Zach Wilson ahead of him. There was a list that was on NFL Network about an hour ago that had Trey Lance ahead of Justin Fields as well, quarterback from North Dakota State. Am I missing something? Like, do you think that Justin Fields is going to slide down to like seven or eight in this draft?
I mean, what would Falcons fans saying if that happens? Like, if he's sitting there at four and they don't take him,
they take Zach Wilson.
I mean, look,
Zach Wilson's a good player.
Yeah, I haven't watched a lot of Zach Wilson. I think he's a good player. I haven't watched any of Trey Lance. We've been hearing about Trey Lance all year. I'm with you, though. I mean, Justin Fields may not be right now 100% ready-made to step in and, you know, win 11 games in the NFL, be a top QB in the league. I mean, that guy's tools are, you know, they're elite. He's got a chance to, I think, be a special quarterback in the NFL. Everything you're looking for. And again, he sat out, you know, he didn't play his first year at Georgia as a freshman because, you know, Jake Fromm. And then he plays 2 years with Ohio State, including this shortened year. And I thought what we saw from him in the playoff was a pretty good glimpse of what he could be, which is pretty special. I don't know. If he gets to seven, see, that you just
poor guy.
Well, exactly. And then I will agree with anyone who says his career is going to be that great because he's going to be in Detroit. The Lions will screw him up. Although Dan Campbell will probably have him like ripping spleens out.
So. Yeah, go out there and just punch Aaron Rodgers in the face in the game. Ugh. Yeah.
I'm with you though. He's better than that.
So
I think
we know that the Titans, I mean, they need help on the edge, rushing the quarterback. obviously. I mean, that's got to be a priority in the draft this year. Mel Kiper has the Titans selecting Gregory Rousseau from Miami with a 22nd overall pick in the NFL draft. Kiper says, quote, "This has to be an edge rusher, right? The Titans had a putrid pass rush last season, finishing with 19 total sacks, which was only two more than the last-ranked Bengals. They got very little from free agent signings Jadeveon Clowney, and leading sacker Harold Landry finished with only 5.5 sacks. That's not good enough for a team that thinks it's a Super Bowl contender. The 6'7" Rousseau, another opt-out at 15.5 sacks in a breakout 2019 season, but he doesn't have an elite first step and needs to add some moves to his repertoire. With only 1 year of production and no live football in a year, he's another wild card in this class, but again, teams love pass rushers, so he could be in demand. So what do you think if that's the route they go about Gregory Rousseau at Miami? Like Kiper says, an opt-out this past year, but 15.5 sacks in 2019.
I think Rousseau's a stud. I think he's really good. There are definitely some concerns there, and that's one of those things where, you know, I think he's a guy who, with his talent, may have been a much higher pick, you know, if things had played out differently. But it is also a gamble. And when you talk about someone who hasn't played a lot, you do think about Kevin Dodd and how he had a very kind of brief, really impressive, but brief window of production at Clemson. We know how that worked out. But I think Rousseau is good. And I think you'd be pretty excited with him. There's some good, you know, possibilities. Kwity Paye from Michigan is good. You know, he's a guy, I don't know if he would be there then, but that's a possibility if you're going edge. I mean, Patrick Jones from Pittsburgh is really good. Really good. And it's just, you know, it's these mock drafts, it's just so hard to have any idea how things are going to work out to, you know, a lot of times there's just so many things. One or two things happens, and then everything gets changed. Azeez Ojulari from Georgia, although the Titans and Georgia-based players haven't been great, either Georgia or Falcons players haven't been great, but he's good. He's a very good guy who could be there too. And, yeah, I think it just makes sense right now to look at edge with them, even if they do go sign one or two guys in free agency.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You look at the strategies you could take in this if you're the Titans. We've had Ben and Heidi on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, say that the Titans should trade back and acquire more picks in this draft. And we've seen it before. John Robinson, certainly not afraid to move around in the draft. Look, I think it depends on who's there and who's available at 22. But if you feel like you can get a pass rusher that can come in immediately, I mean, I don't see a way you can trade back in this draft. If anything, if there's a pass rusher you really want, if you're John Robinson, maybe you trade up to get that guy.
Yeah, you could go either way. And I also think that whether it's free agency or draft, we're focused on edge, and I understand it. But they've got to have another guy up front. They've got to have another tough-to-block player up front to help Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah.
So, you know, that can mean such a difference to your edge guys too. If you can get that push in the interior, and it just wasn't there this year. It wasn't there enough. I'm assuming, you know, Simmons, I mean, he's on the injury report a lot at the last half of the year.
Well, and remember, Daquan Jones going to be a free agent as well.
And I think that that's an example of a choice where, and Daquan Jones has been a very good player, but that's an example of someone you've been paying and you're probably not going to pay him. You have so many tough choices. I would expect him to be somewhere else next year. And I think you've got to get someone who can really be disruptive and tag team with Jeffrey Simmons. And I think you do that, that could immediately make whatever you do on the edge better.
Another guy that's in an interesting spot on this mock draft by Kiper is Mac Jones, quarterback at Alabama. Kiper's got him going 15th overall.
Drew Chester has him number one overall.
The first pick going to Jacksonville. Kiper's got him 15th overall going to New England to be the quarterback of the Patriots. That would be very interesting. Look, it's going to be fascinating to see what Belichick does at quarterback. Obviously, Cam Newton did not work out, and he's not going to be the quarterback of the future with the Patriots. Do you go in the draft? Do you try to make a trade and bring in a quarterback? What do you think of maybe Mac Jones in New England?
I mean, I'm looking at Belichick. I'm like, you've got to be the one who gets Deshaun, right?
Mister, a little bit of response from Brady getting to the Super Bowl, right?
Exactly. Mr. Wiley, Coach Belichick, GM Belichick, he's got to be the guy who gets Watson, right? That would be fun. And then next year, Brady goes 9-7, and Belichick wins the Super Bowl with Watson, and then everybody, it was actually Belichick all along. Mac Jones, sure. I think Mac Jones will be a good NFL quarterback. I mean, I think he has a chance to be. He throws a nice ball. He's got to get somebody.
Yeah,
Belichick's got to get somebody.
I mean, it did not work this year. I mean, it was rough to watch for most of the season at quarterback for the Patriots. Kuiper's got Najee Harris going 30th to the Bills in the draft, which, as we know, they had zero running game whatsoever. If they can get Najee Harris, that offense could be something else in Buffalo.
That's be fun to watch.
That's a thought right there. Najee Harris is ridiculous. He's going to be fun to watch in this league.
And then with the 32nd pick, so he's projecting the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, Azeez Ojulari as their pick in the last selection of the first round. So we saw the Chiefs last year go Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round to close it out, maybe adding some help on the edge for that defense in this part of the draft.
It would be nice to see the Chiefs not keep stockpiling talent on offense and making it unfair. Yes. So that'd be good. And there's a guy. There's Ojulari. So, yeah, and some of this is I could see the Titans moving either way based on, they're going to have guys identified who they like a lot and also who they think fits their scheme, which we think will be the exact same scheme. And he's a good player. He's one of those guys, too. It's when you have players on these loaded teams, it's just like with Mac Jones, who's he throwing to? You have to keep that in mind. Ojulari was on maybe I'd say probably the most talented defense in college football this year. The best collection of
good
talent.
Yeah.
So how much does that help him, in terms of his production? But, I mean, just watching him as a player, I think he's a guy who could help the Titans right away.
Coming up next, we will get into the Nashville Predators. A big road trip coming up this weekend against the defending Stanley Cup champions. Terry Criss, Predators TV analyst, will join us to preview that. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. The Nashville Predators taking on the defending Stanley Cup champions this weekend in Tampa Bay. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Predators TV analyst, Predators legend, Terry Criss. Crispy, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. Well, like everybody else, we're following our hockey team, the Preds, getting ready for a Super Bowl matchup and all the arguments for that one and whatnot, and sort of just enjoying life. Beautiful sunny day out, I guess, with all the hectic stuff and shenanigans going on around the world. It's, so far, a good day.
It is a good day, Crispy, and it's even better now that you're on here with us. And obviously, two big wins in a row for the Predators against Chicago. Lots of shots, lots of chances in those games. They're ultimately able to get both of them done in extra time. What stood out to you about the Predators in their two wins against the Blackhawks?
Well, the biggest thing that stood out is I think they're trying to give me a heart attack. Well, I really think it's a concerted effort to give Crispy a heart attack and see how he handles it, because both games, I'm telling you, the guys worked their buns off to get to the net. They worked their buns off to get good, solid scoring chances, and like Duchesne said, I hate that phrase, but he said, we're snake bit. And snake bit to me means that you're getting the chances, but you don't have the finish, the hands to finish it. And that's what we need right now. And I was watching the last two games. And when you work that hard, and let's be honest, you give the other goaltenders credit. You have to, because if you're stopping the point-blank chances we're getting. But the thing that stands out to me is we have to, and you heard me use this word, finish. Finish. I don't want to hear anymore. We had goalposts, we had crossbars, we had good boys. We're coming. Finish means that puck, that little black thing you shoot around out there, goes over that little goal line out there, and it counts as a goal.
Why is it so streaky for some guys, Crispy? And obviously, You know, when I think of Streaky, I do think of like a Forsberg who right now is hot, and, you know, sometimes he'll go through ups and downs. But like a guy like Duchesne right now who is creating these chances, and he does it does look like he's just having some bad luck. But I know I hear hockey guys talk about gripping that stick a little bit too tightly, and, you know, like how much does that play into bad luck, and how hard is it to sort of release yourself from that and just let it come to you?
Well, you know what? I have to speak to that as have been a coach and coaching guys like that, because as a player, see, I never had that hard luck or that bad luck because I never got around the net to score. So from one side of the coin, as a player, I don't know. But as a coach, you know what? You got to just stay positive. And I heard you, Shane, talking. There's no other way. You got to keep telling yourself and yourself that, hey, I'm doing something right. I'm getting these chances. And I know it's sort of counter to what I said, but you stay positive. And you look back. If you weren't getting any chances, and you and the coach would have a conversation together, and you'd have a little head-to-head. But when you're getting the chances, you're doing a lot of stuff right. So, like Coach Holmes preaches, and now I hear the players doing the same thing, stick the course. Stay to what you're doing. They will start to go, and they will start to win the net for you. Just stay with it.
Preds TV analyst Terry Crisp on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Crispy, obviously we knew coming into this season it was going to be a different year for Pekka-Rinne and not the same role that he's been used to. He's had two starts so far, got the win the other night against Chicago. What have you seen out of Pekka so far this year, both on the ice and the way that he's handled this situation alongside UC Saros?
You know what? Being honest, I haven't seen anything new from Pekka-Rinne. He has been the best class gentleman I've run across in a long time in this game, and with our organization, he is what I would call the personified the team player. And he's been through what we're doing now. He's played games, been to the big ones, and he's doing exactly what he knows he has to do. Saros is now the heir apparent to the throne. He's not going to give his throne away for free, but you never hear him bitch. You know, you'll never hear him complain. You'll never hear a bad comment in the news from Pekka-Rinne. And as far as his game is solid. He's a solid goalkeeper still. We're lucky. We're very fortunate. Shortened season, two top-notch goaltenders to put in the net, and you put Saros in, this team feels like they can win. You put Pekka-Rinne in, and this team feels like it can win. That's a pretty good feeling.
And, Crispy, it certainly looks like, you know, in the defensive zone, you know, these guys are getting more help, too, than they did at times last year. There's some responsibility and the structure's in place. Guys are playing well in the defensive zone. But, obviously, the penalty kill and, you know, the numbers are going to be skewed, especially from the one night in Dallas. But
yeah.
From your view as a coach, what do you see from the penalty kill? Are you concerned? Do you think that they've even figured some things out since Dallas?
You know what? My career was, as I mentioned earlier, was never a big goal scorer. I was defensive, and my role was a penalty killer. That's when I got my ice time. In fact, I used to tell the referee a lot of times that our guys on the ice deserve more penalties because I needed some ice time. Hey, ref, Clarkie just tripped that guy, you know. Clarkie just tripped him. You should have called that. And on the penalty kill, I always firmly believe that when you go out there, the four guys that go out there, and we used to, on our way to the face-off or whenever we went, we'd be huddled, and we would be convinced that they're not getting out of their own zone. They're not getting through the neutral zone, and they're sure as heck not getting set up in our zone. So we always figured that attack. Everybody thinks penalty killing is defense. No. I watched the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I watched the Carolina Hurricanes, and not so much Chicago, but if you watch their penalty kill, they're coming at you full force. When the puck moves, they don't just come out stop 3 to 4 feet in front of the puck carrier at the point or in the corner along the sideboards. They finish it. They're right in. They're making you move that puck. They're making you pass it, shoot it. I just think the penalty killers, you got to be aggressive. And in today's game, all your penalty killers have to be good skaters, because they've got to be off the mark in a hurry, back to the mark in a hurry, but pushing. You push. I can't see why you give anybody any free walk out of their zone in our game. Why do you let them walk out of their blue line safe or through the neutral zone safe or over your blue line safe? Push them. Attack them. Make them do something they don't want to do.
Preds TV analyst Terry Crisp on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Crispy, taking on the Lightning this weekend. Obviously, the defending Stanley Cup champions. They've got options galore to score goals. A great defensive team as well. What kind of a test is this for the Predators early in the season? And what kind of motivation is it when you're going up against the defending Cup champions this early in the season?
You always love it. When you're playing, when we were first in our formative years, when we played Detroit, and they were the big brothers in the block, it brought the best out of us because we knew that we had to beat them to go anywhere. We had to be able to beat Detroit to get out and move on. And right now when you're playing the Stanley Cup champions, it's a test. You love it. They're the best. They're holding Lord Stanley. And if you can beat them, you're doing something because they're odds-on favorites probably to be in there again this year. So when you look at the next six games, four of them for us against Tampa Bay Lightning, defending Stanley Cup, if you can't get up for them, and if you can't get ready to play against the best in the business, then there is something wrong.
So, Crispy, one guy who obviously registered on the score sheet, Yakov Trenin this week, a guy who, young player, still, some growing to do, but seems to me like the type of guy who, can really bring some of that physicality and some of that, grit that obviously the Preds are trying to have more of. What do you think about him and what his, his future path looks like?
You know what? You said Trenin. I'm going to throw Olivier's name in along the same thing I'm talking about. Richardson, all I say is amen. Thank goodness we have them on our team. We've been talking about grit. We've been talking about toughness. We've been talking about being more aggressive on the ice for the last few years. And right now, when I see Trenin come over the boards and Olivier come over the boards and the veteran Richardson in between them, I'm happy. You know why? The play is in the other team's end. And the other team's got their heads up. They're not freewheeling out there. They're not grinning and laughing and having fun. Trenin's a train coming at you. Olivier is the other part of the train coming. And they both can skate and hit. And Richardson is sort of the guide out there. He's the vet that knows when to back them up, when to move, when to cover up for them. It's what we're looking for. And I think the more they play, the better they're going to get. And if you will recall the last couple of games, when they're on the ice, the play is largely and mostly in the other team's end.
Predators TV analyst Terry Crisp has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Crispy, great stuff as always, my man. We appreciate you taking time to join us.
Oh, always great, guys. Like I was just saying earlier to Ryan there, I miss you guys down in the lounge. We can't get together and have it, and I really miss insulting you guys.
We miss it too, Crispy.
Face to face.
Yes. Save them up for us.
Yeah, you can get us going next time we're there.
I got them saved up. Don't you worry. Hey, stay safe, fellas, and all of our fans out there, stay safe. And we'll see you all hopefully someday together back at the rink.
Sounds like a plan, Crispy. Terry Crisp, Preds TV analyst here with us on Robbie and Rex Road. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Crispy had to say there and look ahead to the matchup this weekend for the Predators against Tampa Bay. Is this a measuring stick weekend? What are we going to learn about this Predators team? All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in every weekday morning at 8:45 when the Preds have a weekday game for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. The next opportunity to participate will be on Monday morning, the Predators taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning that night. Also, it's on Saturday as well. So a big test coming up for the Predators this weekend, obviously, against the defending Stanley Cup champions. Now we know Nikita Kucherov not going to be a part of things, a crucial player for the Lightning. He's going to be out the entire regular season, so that's a big loss for Tampa Bay. But you've still got, plenty of weapons. Victor Hedman on the back end, Steven Stamkos, lots of talent for this Tampa Bay team. And quite frankly, if I'm the Predators, like you look going into this game, Tampa Bay was just shut out last night by Carolina, and the game went into overtime, 1-0 final between Carolina and Tampa Bay, which if you would have told me heading into that game with those two offenses that the final score would be 1-0, I'd be like, I don't know about that. But if you're the Predators, you're obviously aware Tampa Bay's got the ability to break out. Joe, what kind of a test is this for the Predators heading into this back-to-back set this weekend, Saturday night and Monday night as well, against Tampa Bay? What are we going to learn about this group depending on how the results of these games go?
Well, the Preds have not played well away from home now, two games. But still, I mean, they were two pretty bad games in Dallas last weekend, so they've got to be able to go somewhere else against another good team and, you know, the best team, the defending champ, and prove something. It's really weird how well the Preds have played against Tampa Bay in recent years versus, you know,
well.
Like probably – well, they probably have a better record against them than, like, against the Red Wings, right, in the last, like,
they
3 or 4 years.
They absolutely do, yeah.
I mean, which is just one of those – I mean, it's just bizarre. And I don't know – I mean, you tell me. Why is that? Is there anything about this matchup that lends itself to that, or is it just hockey randomness?
I think a lot of it's just hockey randomness. I think when you've got teams that are not quite as familiar with each other, it could be hard to predict those games. Now – they're getting ready to become a whole lot more familiar with each other this year. They'll be playing each other a lot in the same division. I mean, Pekka's been dominant against them. That's the main thing that stood out. Pekka in his career, 9-0-2 against Tampa Bay. And Tampa Bay's had some really good teams in Pekka's career, 9-0-2 with a .921 save percentage. So that's been a big part of it as well. But it's interesting, like if you're John Hines, I would assume, based on the way that Pekka's played so far, he's going to get one of these two. I mean, Saros just had a great game against Chicago. I would assume, whether it's Saturday night or Monday night, Pekka's probably getting one of these two, even though it's not a back-to-back situation.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've just sort of assumed that, but you certainly don't have to do that with Saros. But yeah, I would say the way Pekka played last time, that would make sense to do that. I don't know, like the history, I don't know how much that really plays into it. And that's the thing. When the hockey randomness does, it's probably a lot easier to happen when it's the other conference, when it's one at your place, one at their place, as it has been with both of these two teams who are now in their division this year. And ultimately, it's probably not going to be a great thing to be playing these guys this much, you know, over the haul of this season. But to me, if you can get 2 points out of these two games – I think you feel okay about things.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in and says, if you look, most home teams are having the success early this season. Playing on the road isn't that favorable this year for some reason. And it is interesting. Home teams off to a very good start in the NHL. And obviously, I mean, that's strange in this regard, that there's not really much crowd, you know, advantage that you get this year. I mean, Dallas has 5,000 fans in the house. That's a pretty sizable crowd for this type of environment. The Preds had around 1,000 in there the other night against Chicago. So, I mean, it's not like there's zero home ice advantage, but it's nowhere near the same thing as it used to be. But I just think, and we talked to John Hines a little bit about it yesterday, there's so much that goes into going on the road this year and traveling, and you're not really even allowed to leave the hotel at that point. You've got to find a way to stay engaged, stay stimulated, like John Hines was talking about yesterday. I wonder how much that has factored into road teams struggling up until this point and adjusting to the new life on the road.
Shouldn't not going to the bar help the road teams?
Maybe. I've seen that work both ways.
I mean, like teams coming here, for example.
This should be a huge advantage.
This is one of those. I think that's one of the secret weapons of the Preds at home. Not just their fans, but like, hey, welcome to Nashville and check out Broadway.
Night before the game. Nashville-Vegas home ice advantage has a little bit different meaning to
that's
it.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, of course, with the Preds, again, it's two games. They just played poorly. I mean, DeShane was talking the other day about how it's kind of tough and you have to gather in a lounge. You can't just go to dinner and things like that. But sounds like John Hines has got some stuff he's going to plan to try to have some recreation built in there and things like that. So I would imagine, yeah, you would think that kind of like the NFL this year, that over time it would even out a little bit and home teams would have a little bit less of an edge just because. Not that I think with the Preds, and especially, of course, we think back to that run, I think that clearly helped them, what that arena was.
Sure.
I don't think hockey is as dictated by crowds as other sports. Like, I think baseball and hockey are less impacted.
I agree. I think the stats largely bear that out. I mean, if you look at the playoffs the last 5 years, it's basically right down the middle in terms of road and home success. So I would agree with that. I think the one area where it does give you a little bit of an advantage is having the last change and being able to match up that way. Outside of that, I don't think there's a massive advantage either way. Although I will say, yeah, like you said, in the run in 2017, I mean, it was palpable what kind of an effect that had on
those
that team.
Timeouts. I mean, that's when it mattered. Like those timeouts late in the game where maybe you're tired, maybe you're a little less tired. I mean, the guys talked about it after every game. And then maybe if you're the opponent, it's a little bit not intimidating, but it's a little bit, you know, you feel like the whole world's on top of you when that place was up in arms like that.
You mentioned Yakov Trenin, and he's a guy that's been very interesting to watch. He couldn't get into the lineup the first few games here. Ever since he's come in, four games, has the one goal on the season so far in the first game against Chicago. I've really liked that fourth line of Trenin, Richardson, and Olivier. Obviously, more size, more physicality on that line than we've seen from that group in the last few years on the fourth line. And right now, you know, Cal Yarncroke is hurt. Rocco Grimaldi has been the healthy scratch in three of the last four games, which if you would have told me that heading into this year, I would have been very surprised that there would ever be a three-game stretch where Rocco Grimaldi isn't playing. I think it's going to be tough for him to get back in right now based on the way the other lines are playing. I love this makeup that they have on the fourth line. Their analytics have been good. They've been controlling the play in the offensive zone, and they do. I mean, they bring physicality to the game. I mean, Olivier, he's a guy that really didn't even factor into our discussions in training camp about making this team and being on this roster. I think Olivier's been really good so far. I mean, you're not going to get a lot of offense out of him, but I think the physicality, playing away from the puck and keeping the puck in the zone all along the wall and winning those battles, he's been really good so far.
Yeah, they're a heavier team with those guys, and I think there's value in that. I will say also, you know, if you are still struggling to score, I mean, Grimaldi is a guy who can get you, you know, some goals on the board. So I wouldn't write him off. Are you well acquainted with Olivier's career path and everything? Like, do you know his story?
Yeah. So born in Mississippi, baby.
Yeah, explain to me Matthew Olivier, born in Biloxi, Mississippi.
His father was playing, I can't remember exactly, it may have been the ECHL, playing for a team in Mississippi, and that's where he was born. So, I mean, he was raised in Canada. He was raised, you know, up north. But he was technically born in Mississippi.
He's a Mississippian.
The first NHL player born in Mississippi.
Very good.
Making history here this year with the Nashville Predators.
I knew I could count on you. I knew I could throw anything at you and count on you. You don't know what my T-shirt means, but
it's okay.
Yeah. Okay, real quick. I want to do that. I want to do an experiment.
You want to, like, publicly shame me?
Yeah, I want to. You and Porth. Okay, on the text line, anybody out there listening, my shirt says Janko Olive Oil Importing. What is that a reference to? Watch how fast
it
comes.
Well, now that you've pointed it out, I know what it's a reference to.
Now because I told you.
I understand
can't say anything.
I'm not going to say anything.
I want to see how fast the text line responds.
See if they've got it on the text line. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025 on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Anybody swearing at me on there today, by the
way? Not today.
You haven't been ripping Garen Tano
to make it.
So someone yells at me about it.
Yeah. Hey, that's even. You stole my joke. I stole the blame. You stole the blame from me, too.
That's right. I keep getting a claim for that joke, by the way.
Yeah.
You're like my joke writer. Have you ever seen the movie Funny People with Sandler?
Yeah.
You're Seth Rogen.
Oh,
my little joke writer.
That movie was not good.
I'm surprised Porth's seen it.
That's the first thing. My first response is, you saw the movie. You didn't like that movie at all?
No, I thought it was way drawn out.
It was too long.
It just wasn't funny. Like I expected when I was watching the movie, when I turned it on, I was like, this is going to be a good movie. And then I was just very underwhelmed.
You didn't laugh at all in that movie?
Not much, no.
Already a winner on the text line, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, it's an easy one.
Godfather.
Yeah. Janko. So my brother and I sent each other T-shirts, goofy T-shirts. That's what we do for birthday gifts. So he sent me that, and let's see if you guys get this one. He sent me this shirt. I mean, I've sent him, like, Mountain Dew shirts and stuff. He also sent like the weird, like Duck Hunt. Like, what is that, Duck Hunting Family? What the heck was that? You know what I'm talking about, the
Duck Dynasty?
Yeah, Duck Dynasty.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The like Duck Hunting Family?
Yeah.
I thought you meant Duck Hunt like Nintendo.
That would actually be awesome. His other shirt he sent me was Callahan Auto Parts, Sandusky, Ohio. Anyone?
Tommy Boy.
You didn't know that? I didn't know.
No. Oh, my gosh. How does he have movie? You're not my joke writer anymore.
Why?
But UCFK will always have that.
Okay.
Have you not seen Tommy Boy?
No, I haven't.
Porth, can you believe this?
There's like one 90s movie I haven't seen that Porth has. Sue me.
You got to watch that, man.
Okay.
I will not. I'll just resist.
Porth, you seen Star Wars?
No.
I rest my case.
Nor do I. We're done with this conversation.
All right. That's a mic drop moment right there. We're done with this conversation. When we come back, David Uppen from The Athletic will join us. We'll get his thoughts on the hiring of Josh Heupel and where Tennessee goes from here. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.